Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that wants to know which clan you were in. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
So recently BMG did a huge piece of research into 10 different clans, not Scottish, Steve, although probably some of the people they researched were Scottish. But these instead are groups which have similar values that make up opinion groupings now in British politics. Now we're going to discuss that report. We're going to think about which parties vying for which particular clan. So the report starts, Steve, with talking about values and emotions. And the idea is similar to what we've talked about previously on the podcast, which is that people aren't rational, Steve. People don't necessarily think logically.
You shock me.
I know. It's almost like when people hear names like Phil Willis, it brings them into paroxysms of rage, which...
Can't imagine anybody acting like that.
No, indeed. So the idea is that they talk about statements like, should the railways be renationalised or should there be a cap on the number of migrants that come to Britain every year? And the way that people, the way that we are guided on how to make decisions about those are with values, or they call them heuristics as well. And they are the things that decide how people vote and decide what people think politically. And traditionally, how we voted was generally class was the biggest determinant. So in the 20s and 30s and the 1910s. And now they're arguing it's not really class as much as it's the attitudes we have and the social values that we have. And they've identified 10 different clans which share broadly similar values. And we'll try and talk through those, see if we think it's accurate, and talk about which party we think is vying for which particular clan. So there's 10 of them. So the first clan that we're going to look at, they call the Bastions of Tradition and the Individual, or BTI. So these people, they support a small state, they want low taxes, they've got small C conservative views on social issues, immigration and family life. They are strong supporters of traditional British institutions like the royal family and tend to celebrate Britain's colonial heritage. Now, oh, it's a tough one trying to place this on the political spectrum, Steve.
I know. I mean, this is one of those things where we're quite lucky in the UK that we have a political party which isn't named, does what it says on the tin in the form of the Conservatives. I think these people may very well make up a significant core of the Tory party's vote.
Yes. And I think this is... this is the traditional right. But interestingly, this makes up about a tenth of the electorate. They reckon about 11%. So it's almost, I suppose, core Tory, you could say. Not much else to say, I suppose. But then you've got the flip side of that, and they are the Global Green Community. Now, hilariously or predictably, depending on your point of view, when we did the test about which clan we were in and we had to use our values to determine various positions, this is where we found ourselves. So in this Global Green Community, these members combine an array of socialist views on the economy — you've never been described as a socialist before, that's interesting — with liberal and environmentalist stances on social issues. Their version of socialism has distinctly environmentalist overtones, have a strongly civic interpretation of Britishness, and little interest in the nation state and want an ethical foreign policy. This is an interesting group because, I suppose, again, this is the traditional kind of left-leaning voters, I suppose. Again, it's about a tenth of the electorate. And I imagine that, at the moment, these are Labour voters. But I imagine if you were the Green Party and you were hoping that we have some sort of PR system, you would try and get a big chunk of these voters, essentially your 5% or your 10%, to get a decent chunk of MPs in Parliament.
Absolutely. And the same goes for the Liberal Democrats as well. Pretty much any left-wing or party that has, you know, pretensions of being left-wing needs these people amongst their midst in order to actually get anywhere. So yeah, they are quite an interesting kind of little group in and of themselves. As more and more young people become eligible to vote, and as the more conservative older voters, you know, there's no nice way to put this, die off. This is a portion of the electorate that's only going to get bigger, because as we've seen time and time again, generally speaking, younger people are more progressive and left wing than older people, and as you know, that portion of the electorate grows, that these people are going to be more and more important to the outcomes of elections.
I mean, I've written on my sheet here Lib Dems with a question mark, because I feel like these are the kind of people that in certain seats the Lib Dems were targeting. A Nick Clegg put pay to trying to target those particular voters. And it's the kind of voter that last year, that is the kind of Corbynite thesis of how Labour could gain voters, was essentially Ed Miliband was austerity light, and therefore Labour needed to go more left-wing and attract these people who were voting Lib Dem, voting Green, which last year worked. And it'll be interesting to see if Labour can keep hold of them, or whether or not if the Green, more people that maybe end up voting Greens in other elections. I suppose it depends on the voting system, whether you get any more prominent Greens like Caroline Lucas. But it feels like, at the moment, Labour's got them sewn up, but it depends. To be honest, I think a lot of it depends on how Brexit goes as well, and Labour's approach to Brexit. Didn't take long, did it? 5 minutes, first Brexit reference, there we go. Then the third group, the Proud and Patriotic State Clan, which sounds like what you'd call a fascist party in an Osborne children's book. But they are in favour of redistribution of wealth. They want nationalisation of key industries. They have a strong opposition to multiculturalism. And they also don't like freedom of movement. And they are characterised as patriotic people with socialist stances on the economy. Now, I can't think of any one of my friends or acquaintances with views like this. But this is basically, it's a mixture of things, isn't it? One, this is basically blue Labour, which is we want to be left wing, but we also don't like immigrants. Sorry, LJ. But also, these are the kind of people that UKIP were targeting as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
Paul Nuttall, do you remember Paul Nuttall? He's a Liverpool footballer, Nobel Prize winner, who was UKIP leader very, very briefly. His strategy was to try and target those former Labour voters in places like Stoke. It didn't work because he was rubbish. But they're the kind of people who were voting BNP, maybe voting for UKIP as well.
Yeah, broadly speaking, these are your traditional white working class voters who, you know, we spend an awful lot of time agonising over how they're going to vote. These are the people who probably voted for Brexit, and at the moment, some have ended up supporting the Tories over Brexit and more kind of socially conservative issues. Others have, just because of how the balance of their values have kind of like unfolded, have kind of come back to Labour. But these are essentially the people that were a significant part of the UKIP vote in previous general elections. And as you can see by how the results of the last general election, you know, that all of that vote did not come to the Conservatives. A significant amount of it went back to Labour, or went to Labour in the first place. So
I think I'm right in saying that Theresa May launched her campaign in Bolton last year, and I think then the manifesto was launched in Halifax, I think. So there was definitely this feeling of trying to target those northern towns that it looked like might switch. Switch against Corbyn because he wasn't seen as patriotic enough, because he only wears a coat that's worth £79 to a popular, whatever the hell it was. And it didn't really work, or at least it didn't work yet. There's a few areas in which, so Copeland, I think, in the by-election was lost, and there's a couple of other places in Derbyshire, I think, but it hasn't really happened yet. And it'll be interesting to see if we do have a little bit of a realignment where these people go. Interestingly, they're the biggest group, apparently, at 15%. Next one, Orange Bookers. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Orange Book, Steve. It refers, apparently, to the title of a book penned by prominent Lib Dem politicians. And they combine centre-right views on the economy with liberal views on society and immigration, and advocate liberal solutions to many social and economic issues. And they are the most supportive clan members of free trade, free movement of people, and multiculturalism.
And free markets.
And free markets.
Which is the kind of the implicit thing there. The Orange Bookers are an interesting tribe, and used to include me. Hello, my name is Steve, and I used to be, and I am a reformed Liberal Democrat, member of the right.
Didn't even go off and work for Facebook. You can't even claim to have sold out.
I know. But yeah, the Orange Bookers are going to be an interesting tribe, because they don't necessarily see themselves as being of the right, and they don't necessarily align themselves with the Conservative Party, despite the fact that, you know, in many ways that would be the natural home for them. These are the traditional liberal voters. And, you know, you do have some people within the Conservative Party who do kind of, who do fit this bill, like George Osborne, for instance, is would probably fall under this category. But as would Nick Clegg, yet they were in two very different parties. Ultimately, that makes them quite an interesting battleground, because depending on what's important, if it's the economy or if it's the kind of like the social liberal issues or cultural issues, that will determine where they swing. So if they're more likely to be, if we're in an economic downturn, say, maybe they're going to vote more with their economic head on and go Conservative. But if it's a, you know, if the state of the economy is actually all right, maybe they lean a bit more leftwards and go with their social liberalism and vote for a different party. Now, that makes them actually a potentially key battleground, especially when you look at the kind of the polarization that occurs over a lot of cultural issues. So, for instance, trans rights are probably going to be one of those sorts of things where an awful lot of, you know, your Nick Cleggs, your George Osbornes are going to be fine with it. They're not going to have an issue with self-ID or anything like that. And they will just happily kind of support that. And if that becomes a major battleground, you could easily see them not voting Conservative, because, you know, the Conservatives are probably more the ones that are going to be making a big fuss about that kind of thing. At which point, the way they vote isn't necessarily in stone, which makes them a key demographic for Labour, the Liberal Democrats, and the Tories to be fighting over, because all of them have kind of like those sorts of people in their midst, because David Miliband and Tony Blair fit this bill as well, I would say. So they are a reasonable size chunk, I think, from what I can remember.
8%, so they're one of the smaller ones, but they're very perfectly formed.
But still, that's 8% of the electorate. When you're building a coalition, especially when things are so as polarised as they are and every vote counts, they're going to be a very important group to bring on board in some capacity.
I mean, it feels to me like under Clegg, these are the people the Lib Dems were trying to target, with the whole messaging of, we are more economically responsible than Labour, but we're more socially liberal than the Tories.
Yeah, and they did very, very well. There's 8% of them, and the Lib Dems got 8%.
That's true. So they all vote. But it feels to me like the Lib Dems under Farren, and even now under the many iterations of Sir Vince Cable, have kind of distanced themselves a little bit from the Orange Bookers. And I suppose that the problem the Lib Dems have always had is essentially they're two different parties. You have the Social Democratic Party, and you then have the traditional Liberal Party. And the tensions of those in different seats was kind of obvious in the coalition. It feels like it's, in many ways, almost Brexit is hiding those divisions now, I feel, in the party. It's the impression I get. And I'm not necessarily sure then if the Lib Dems are targeting these voters in the same way that they were.
They would need to if they want to get back to where they were previously.
But I think, I reckon these voters, it will completely depend on, I think they would vote tactically depending on the seat they're in and depending on the MP it was. But I think that there are swing voters that are worth fighting for. On the other hand, Labour economically are moving away from them. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because the Labour Party isn't a centre-right party.
But cultural, but on the cultural issues, Labour's much more aligned with them.
Which I think is where it comes back to the tactical thing again. And maybe in terms of their values, do they value the social liberalism bit more, or do they value the free market things more?
And there's probably your difference, ultimately, between George Osborne and Nick Clegg. In that Clegg probably leans more towards the social liberalism aspects, despite believing in the free market and the powers of the free market, whilst Osborne leans more to the economic side of things, whilst not caring about or not being overly annoyed by social liberal issues.
So we are almost halfway through. The fifth clan, the Common Sense Solidarity clan, they are very strong supporters of renationalisation and trade unions, and believe firmly in the redistribution of wealth via taxation. They're fairly comfortable with immigration and have mixed views on a number of social issues, such as welfare, human rights, and parenting. It's going to be tricky. I'm going to plump them in with the Labour Party, Steve.
I was going to say that sounds like a significant part of the old Labour right to me in a number of areas.
Oh, interesting. Why Labour right?
They're definitely of the left, in terms of like the kind of like the focus on wealth redistribution and things like that, and things like nationalisation, whilst we tend to associate them with the Labour left, actually it's widely supported across the entirety of the Labour Party. But that more of a kind of a, I can only really use the term right wing focus on some of the other issues, just seems to put them more in that kind of camp.
No, I think that they say they're comfortable with immigration, they don't have a problem with it, and I feel like, I'm not sure.
There's a difference between being comfortable and pro, though.
I feel like the Labour right is part of the proud patriots that we talked about earlier. That's where I feel that a lot of the Labour right is, to be honest. I don't really see them in this bit. I see these as kind of old-fashioned Labour voters, but who are a little bit more socially liberal. So I don't see any other party. I see them Labour, though. Yeah. I don't see them as being...
Again, the Greens would like them.
Yes.
But ultimately, these are definitely a core of the Labour vote.
And probably more, if anyone, I feel like the Labour right would not vote Green, whereas the people probably would do. And maybe voted Green or maybe voted Lib Dem in the new Labour era. And again, maybe they're people who, again, Corbyn tactically to bring them back into the fold a little bit. That's kind of how I feel.
Maybe.
You've also got then the Notting Hill Society, which I think is probably chaired by David Cameron at the moment. And they're the most pro-business of all the clans. They mix a modern form of conservatism on the environment and society with traditional views on family and British institutions. And so the Tory modernisers... It's not good. I mean, I suppose in a way, Theresa May herself was a Tory moderniser, was talking... She's the one who said that the Tories were used to be called the Nasty Party, or some people call us the Nasty Party. Though I don't think you quite put her in the kind of David Willetts, David Cameron, George Osborne mould. I mean, in terms of modernisers now, maybe you've got people like Tom Tugendhat, who apparently is a Tory leadership candidate and not a
made-up person.
I assumed he was. Doesn't feel to me like they're riding high in the Tory party at the moment.
No, I think this is very much what, broadly speaking, we probably would have classed as the Remain wing of the Conservative Party in a lot of ways. This is your Heidi Allens, your Ken Clarks, your, to a degree, your Tom Tugendhats, your Johnny Mercers. These are individuals who are conservative, broadly, in outlook, but could probably find a home elsewhere in a liberal party. They'd be on very much on the right of that. But then again, David Laws was a member of the Liberal Democrats and could easily have fit in within the Conservatives. So, like, these are an interesting battleground for the Conservatives and the Lib Dems, potentially. Although, again, moving away from the Clegg style of liberalism means that these become less and less feasible for the Lib Dems.
But I think there are quite a few people who've joined the Lib Dems from the Tories over Brexit. Mm. And you always see occasionally on Lib Dem Voice, there's always the odd person who writes and say they're a Tory Lib Dem switch. And I think there's a few people from Labour who've joined Lib Dems over Brexit. But I wonder if it's more so on the Tory side.
Could very well be. I mean, certainly from the anecdotal evidence I've seen, I think that's supported. Obviously, only the Lib Dems really know what previous memberships their members might have had. But there is definitely an overlap in this area, but it's just a question of how big is that overlap?
So by my reckoning, so we've had six of the clans so far, of which I would maybe say you've got about, again, about 20-odd percent, I would say, solidly, probably left-wingy Labour, 20%, maybe pretty Tory. And then you've got that 23% of the proud patriots, the kind of blue Labour types, and the orange bookers as well, who I feel like are really up for grabs. And there's probably a few people there, like we've talked about, the people in the Notting Hill set who might be Lib Dems now, but essentially it's kind of quite evenly balanced. And the next three clans, I think I've identified as the swing voters, essentially, that probably the next election will be decided between. So the first group are called Strength, Agreeable and Respect. And again, we're into smaller groups now, so this is 9% of the electorate. And Strength, Agreeable and Respect, they tend to favour authority and discipline, leaving in favour of a just deserts approach to crime and punishment. They have a preference for a strong and often uncompromising state, which extends to areas like defence and Britain's place in the world. And in most other areas of social and economic policy, they tend to have mixed or middling views.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. You know, my gut instinct is to say their natural home is probably more in the Conservative Party than anywhere else, just because of their focus on, you know, having that more authoritarian streak and bent to them. But that said, mixed views on the economy, Labour has enough individuals in it who do have quite or... I'll use the phrase authoritarian tendencies.
But the new Labour government was not exactly a big fan of civil liberties.
No.
And a lot of the stuff on kind of the tough on crime measures, a lot of the stuff that was briefed the tabloid press, a lot of the stuff Gordon Brown was doing over 90-day detention was essentially populist measures to look tough on crime.
Yeah, so there's certainly those who are probably a part of the new Labour coalition. Whether or not Jeremy Corbyn could attract them in this day and age, I'm less convinced of that, and that obviously means it's one less area or one less group for Labour to reach out to.
But I think the calculation that Corbyn has made, it feels like, and that left-wing critique of New Labour is essentially that New Labour spent too much time chasing this group, you could say the Strength, Agreeable, Respect, and then that meant that, you know, you go... If you target this group, then you lose a lot of people from the global green community who we've talked about and the common sense solidarity people who are the, I mean, in terms of numerically now anyway, bigger groups and the more left-wing voters. So that, I feel, is the calculation that Corbyn is making.
And, you know, we'll wait and see if that's actually, will pay off. But ultimately, look at where the polls were using 2017 as the baseline. You need to be picking up more of those individuals to actually get you over the line. Some of these, at least some of the individuals from these swing voter blocks, need to be coming to Labour. And authoritarian tendencies doesn't really speak of Corbynism, so I'm not necessarily sure these ones are on the table for them.
I feel like, I'm not quite sure how to word this, but if you had a sane UKIP party...
This would definitely be that. This, I would say this is almost UKIP under Farage, would be kind of like their core in a lot of ways. UKIP under Gerard Batten, they've basically just gone full fascist. So yeah. Not necessarily. You know, there probably are some individuals in this group who would lean in that direction. But not these days. I don't think the UKIP would be appealing to them.
No. Well, I mean, judging from the polls, it's not really appealing to anyone.
No.
Then we've got Modern Working Life, which I'm pretty sure is a Blur album. But they are strong believers of the value of hard work and social mobility, supporting the view it's always possible to achieve your goals as long as you work hard. Which sounds like a Taylor Swift song. And on balance, this clanship, apparently, it believe individuals and not others should be responsible for their own financial well-being and tend to hold liberal views on the environment, LGBT rights and gender equality.
It's Michael Gove. That is just Michael Gove. Michael Gove is going to determine the next election.
To be fair, if he resigned, he probably would have done. One thing we haven't talked about is the nascent centre party, the elephant in the room that every couple of weeks you have a new centre party emerge, and it feels like this is the kind of people, and in terms of the Orange Brokers as well, they're all socially liberal parties, and again, not terribly left wing, but all very socially liberal, and we have talked about how the gap in the market is for that socially conservative party, but I suppose you're right, it's I hadn't really thought of Michael Gove, really, but I suppose this feels a little bit more maybe liberally Tory than Labour.
Yeah.
It's definitely the ban on plastic. It's
right up there. Yeah, no, I do think this is very much an inherently Tory group. And again, one of the successes of New Labour would have been bringing these people into the Labour fold. Certainly at least with the landslide elections at the beginning of Tony Blair's premiership, these people would have definitely been in there in some form.
So we're the penultimate group now, another group of swing voters. We can maybe see if we think Labour's trying to win these people over. They tend to have middling social views with high numbers opposed to open borders and multiculturalism. On social issues, they're fairly liberal, believing that more needs to be done to achieve gender and LGBT equality, but are more conflicted on issues like adolescents choosing their own gender identity, and the measured middle are known for not having very strong political views. We're getting now to the more kind of apathetic, I suppose, and maybe I think we've got the apathy clan to come, which I think is an amazing name for a clan as well. But I feel like, again, part of the Corbynite calculation is that you try and attract those people who don't normally vote to go out and vote. And so I think they're trying to appeal to some of these people. I don't really know if anyone's necessarily representing them in the moment because, well, I suppose if they're opposed to immigration, both Labour and the Conservatives have tried to say, well, free movement's ending as a result of the referendum, so yeah. Both appealing in that sense. In terms of multiculturalism, I still think that Labour is a party of multiculturalism. There's mm-hmm. a certain members of the Tory party who aren't. And both parties still are quite socially liberal, although I'd say Labour is more than the Tories. I think there's that big centre of the Tory party which really isn't very socially liberal. And actually, Theresa May talking last week about how we want these EU migrants, they won't be jumping the queue anymore, feels a bit of a play, not just to these group of voters, but to others as well.
Yeah, I think this group is almost certainly the, you know, what people imagine when they think of a swing voter. Because there is no one specific party which you can easily align them with, or even one or two parties that you can think, oh yeah, they fit into this mould in one form or another. So this is your Mondeo man.
And I feel like both parties are trying to appeal to them in different ways.
Yes.
But it feels to me like in terms of the kind of swinger voters, Labour isn't really trying to persuade a lot of people in terms of those values. I think what our calculation is essentially disenchantment with the government probably wins people over, which is, I mean, possible. But then we've got the final clan, the apathy clan, who are, you're going to be shocked. Apparently they're generally disinterested and disengaged with politics, Steve. And they have very few strong views on many issues. Insert your Ed Miliband joke here. They're unlikely to have given much thought to most economic, political and societal questions. Insert Nick Timothy joke here, either because they're simply not interested or because they feel alienated by the current state of our politics. And again, I suppose maybe Labour last year was trying to appeal to people who didn't vote and try and get them out to vote. And I think there was some success in that, definitely. Certainly, I think local parties on the local campaigning issue, probably if you tell a local party you're not going to vote, generally they won't knock on your door.
Yep, absolutely.
Which is a problem for democracy.
But yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, like, there's a difference between being disengaged because you think they're all the same, you don't think anybody represents you, whatever, and being disinterested. And it's really a question of which of those is an individual in that group? Because if they're disinterested, you ain't going to get them. There's no point making a play for them. If they're disengaged, then you may be able to, because even if they say they don't have strongly held political views, they will almost certainly have principles that they abide by in some form. And you can reach them and persuade them on that your principles align best with theirs. As I say, whether or not they're going to make a massive difference to the result of the next general election or the previous one, I'm not convinced. I don't necessarily think we're going to see a sudden boost of these individuals coming out and about just because Jeremy Corbyn might become Prime Minister. I think this is a risky tactic to be focusing or putting all your eggs in that basket.
I think why this is interesting is because it speaks to the fact that it does feel like British politics has fragmented a little bit over the past 50, 60 years, and that class used to be the big determinant and everyone voted sort of mainly on class reasons, and generally I think voted along family lines as well. You know, if you knock on doors in a lot of areas, they say, oh, well, all my family, all my life has voted Labour, or probably all my family's voted Tory and that kind of thing. And it looked like that was disintegrating, and 2015 looked like actually all these different tribes voted in all different ways in all different places and essentially led to some very distorted results. And what's happened since then is we've had a return of that two-party system. I think partly because of the fact first past the post kind of boxes you up. I think partly Brexit's a big factor of that as well. I think partly because of the decision of the Corbyn campaign to try and campaign for all the wavering left tribes, as we've said. And I think what will be interesting in the further election is where these tribes go. Do you have a bit more of a splintering, or do you essentially see them try and put square pegs in round holes, and do you see essentially a return to two-party politics? Like, does that carry on? I think will be interesting, especially given how Brexit might carry on.
Yeah, I mean, really at this stage, God only knows. This is very much venturing into the world of political predictions, which we don't have a good record of on this podcast. So I think we'll make a pass at that this some other time. But it all in all of these different groups are very interesting ways to analyse and view the electorate. The extent to which they're accurate is debatable in some areas. Certainly some of the terminology is probably a bit outdated. Referring to Orange Bookers and the Notting Hill set, that's very coalition era. Not necessarily a reflection of where things are today. It's not necessarily that the groups are wrong in that instance, but you know, you could make a large play that those could be very similar in a lot of ways. So it is an interesting tool to run analysis and run kind of political war games. The extent to which it is accurate, though, remains to be seen.
Mm. And it'll be interesting to see if the parties try and use it to frame their messaging and Absolutely. Frame those values, I think. So our task for 2019, obviously.
Yep.
We'll be back next week, probably talking about various Brexit chaos or some sort of nonsense, or, I don't know, maybe Michael Gove's Prime Minister now or something. In the meantime, catch notenoughchampagne.com or at No Champagne Pod on Twitter or facebook.com/notenoughchampagne if you want to see a bit more. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. Dave Depper is responsible for our theme tune. Plucky good times. I'm at Paperback Rioter.
I'm at Acoustic Radical.
Happy plotting, everyone.